Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we're taking a really close look at something that feels, well, almost like fiction, the Terran-Caracas Corridor. And this isn't just, you know, two governments finding common ground against Washington. It's way deeper. We're talking logistics, serious, organized sanctions busting. And then there's this really critical question looming over it all, sensitive cargo. Specifically uranium. So our mission really is to unpack all these layers, everything from like hidden jungle airstrips deep in the Amazon, all the way to these global shadow tanker fleets. We want to understand why this risk, which maybe felt hypothetical before, is really hardening into a major policy headache for 2025.
Absolutely. And the sources we're drawing on are, well, they're all over the place. Op-eds, intel reports, technical papers, government statements. So the key thing for us and for you listening is clarity. We need to sort of parse out what we know is confirmed infrastructure, the actual planes, the deals, the money flows from what's still, let's say, an unverified narrative about the cargo itself, though that narrative is gaining traction.
Okay, let's start on the ground then, the physical stuff. First up, this jungle air bridge concept. It sounds dramatic, but when you look at Venezuela's Arco Minera region, especially over near Brazil and Guyana, it's like a whole economy operating completely under the radar.
It really is. And it's, frankly, kind of shocking. Reports confirm just this massive spread of illegal mining. We're talking hundreds, maybe thousands of pits, these makeshift camps, and crucially, all these dirt tracks carved out of the jungle that function as clandestine airstrips.
Airstrips just appearing in the jungle.
Exactly, stretching towards the borders. And the really staggering part, this isn't happening in some useless patch of land. It's deep inside protected national parks, including Canaima, that's a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
Yeah.
So what you have is this ready-made illicit logistics system built to move valuable stuff illegally.
Right. So you've got the sort of rough and ready system down below. Mm-hmm. But then there's the other piece, the more sophisticated end, plugged right into it. And that brings us to the Mtrasur 747 incident, the big diplomatic mess.
Yeah, that whole scandal, that huge Venezuelan cargo jet grounded in Argentina. That was, you know, concrete proof of how mature this corridor could be operationally.
And that plane's history is key, right?
Definitely. We know it used to belong to Iran's Mahan Air. And Mahan Air has been directly linked by the U.S. Treasury to the IRGC's CODS force. So the connection is pretty explicit there.
That saga wrapped up fairly recently, didn't it? The plane ended up in the U.S.
It did. Flown to Florida, February 2024, under a U.S. forfeiture order. Then it was scrapped.
So the plane itself is gone.
The hull's gone, yeah. But the precedent it's set, that's what lingers. It showed an aircraft linked to the IRGC flying these opaque routes, mixed Iranian-Venezuelan crew moving across this whole corridor. It worked, right up until the export control issues caught up with it. It basically proved the concept. A high-risk air bridge is viable for sensitive flights run by sanctioned players.
Okay, so if they can fly the planes, they must have figured out the money side too, without triggering alarms. We're talking IRGC links, hidden airstrips.
It sounds very black market. How do you formalize that? Surely not bank transfers.
Well, that's the genius of it, if you want to call it that. They didn't use banks. They basically replaced the SWIFT code with an oil tanker. This whole corridor since around 2020, it's been built on commodity swaps. Pure barter, designed specifically to be sanction proof.
Like when Venezuela's refineries were failing.
Exactly. Iran sent tankers, sent technicians. They helped stabilize fuel production. But the payment wasn't in dollars. It was all swaps, deliberately sidestepping the normal financial system.
So it started out as like mutual desperation, keeping the lights on, and then became official policy.
Pretty much. That initial survival instinct got formalized in 2022. They signed this huge 20-year cooperation plan, covers everything.
Yeah.
Oil, petrochemicals, military stuff, wider economic ties. It's basically a blueprint for operating under sanctions.
And the sources give actual examples of how this works, which I find fascinating. It's not just theory.
No, it's very real, very tangible trade.
Mm.
Like Venezuela's state oil company, PDVSA, they apparently paid off debts to an Iranian shipyard by just sending them tankers full of fuel oil. No cash involved.
Wow.
And maybe the biggest deal was between 2021 and 2023. Venezuela needed Iranian condensate, that's a type of light oil, to blend with its own super heavy crude so it could actually export it. So Iran sent condensate, Venezuela presumably sent crude or fuel back. The commodities are the currency. And these are massive volumes moving.
Okay, if the barter works so well, why bother with a free trade agreement now? Doesn't that create more paperwork, more potential oversight?
It might seem counterintuitive, but it's about making it permanent, institutionalizing the whole thing. They're finalizing this FTA, aiming for 2024-25.
Right.
It talks about zero tariffs on raw materials, other goods. It shows they're not thinking of this as some temporary workaround. They're building a permanent parallel economic system welded onto that 20-year strategic plan. It's like a separate trading world.
Right. Okay, we've got the planes. We've got the finance, or the lack of traditional finance. Now, the really sensitive part, uranium. When you hear this, it feels like it just popped up in Intel leaks recently. But the Venezuelan uranium story actually goes back quite a way, doesn't it? Back to the Chavez days.
It does, and that's a crucial bit of history. Back in 2009, Venezuela's own mining minister, Rodolfo Sanz, was quite open about it. He publicly announced Iran was helping them with geological surveys, analyzing samples. And he confirmed those surveys showed uranium potential, specifically in western Venezuela and also near San Elena de Uren, right in that eastern mining belt we talked about.
So the potential isn't some secret. The geology is known. It's documented.
Correct. The raw material potential is there. Academic papers confirm it. Even the IAEA, the International Nuclear Watchdog, their UDPO database lists known uranium occurrences and potential zones in Venezuela, places like El Baúl, San Joaquin de Nave. Now, to be clear, and this is important for that analytic humility, the IAEA does not list any active commercial uranium mines operating in Venezuela right now. But the stuff is potentially in the ground. That's undisputed.
But the urgency, the reason we're really digging into this now, comes from the other end of the corridor, Iran's nuclear program, which has, well, reached a pretty critical point lately.
Yes, Iran's capability is what's really driving the risk assessment here. The latest IAEA reports from this year are stark. They estimate Iran's stockpile of uranium enriched up to 60% purity. It's hit around 440 kilograms.
And just to remind people, 60% isn't weapons grade yet, but...
Yeah.
But it's dangerously close. That amount, if they decided to enrich it further to 90%, it's enough for several nuclear weapons. It puts them right near the threshold. And what adds to the worry is this warning from the IAEA late 2025 report, saying they've lost continuity of knowledge over key parts of Iran's fuel cycle. They just can't see everything Iran is doing anymore.
Okay, so Venezuela potentially has the raw material. Iran has the urgent need and less oversight. And this is where those intelligence reports, the narrative starts to take hold, even if the proof isn't public.
Exactly. You start seeing reports, particularly in Spanish language media, citing alleged Israeli or U.S. intelligence. And these reports accuse the Maduro government of actually supplying uranium, maybe raw ore, maybe even some processed material to Iran, starting around 2020. Now, let's stress, this is not open source evidence, but it shows the idea of a Venezuelan uranium pipeline is solidifying into a working assumption in some key capitals. The risk sits right in that gap. Confirmed geology meets confirmed Iranian urgency.
Which leads to the big operational question. If, hypothetically, they did decide to move uranium, would they need to build a whole new setup? Would we see... you know, new secret labs, specialized runways appearing on satellite images.
And this is maybe the most chilling part.
Yeah.
And the analysis suggests they probably wouldn't need to. The necessary infrastructure, the logistics chain.
Yeah.
It's arguably already there. It just needs to be repurposed. Think about it in two layers. First, that extractive belt, the Arco Minero.
The illegal mining zone.
Right. It's already churning out gold, coltan, other valuable minerals. And geographically, it overlaps significantly with those areas identified as having uranium potential.
So the challenge of secretly flying out heavy gold ore is pretty similar to flying out dense uranium ore or yellowcake.
Exactly the same logistical problem, really. And those illegal mines are already supported by existing, quite sophisticated, if improvised, logistics. NGOs, analysts, they've documented this network. The airstrips, the workshops, the supply routes, moving high-value stuff like gold out every single day. That's constant real-world practice in illicit logistics, funded by gold money.
Okay, that's layer one, the existing illicit commodity network. What's layer two?
Layer two is the high-tech military footprint. Iran's been deeply involved in building up Venezuela's drone and surveillance capabilities for years, since the mid-2000s.
Right, the drones.
It confirms this deep, long-term technical presence. It means dedicated aircraft, specialized training. They started with surveillance drones, like the Mohajer 2 Venezuela, rebranded it as the Arpia. Then came the armed Mohajer 6. And just recently, 2024, Caracas showed off its Zamora V1 loitering munition, which looks an awful lot like Iran's Shahid 136 kamikazes drone.
And this isn't just selling hardware off the shelf. It implies Iranian personnel on the ground, right? Trainers, technicians, at Venezuelan bases like El Libertador.
Correct. You need people to assemble, operate, maintain these systems. So that's the dual-use aspect. You combine the mining zone's runways and hidden air transport network with the military drone program's technical facilities, dedicated aircraft, and trained crews.
And you have everything you need already in place.
Pretty much. The entire infrastructure package is there. They can move gold one day, drones the next, and potentially something much more sensitive the day after that, without building anything obviously new or specifically nuclear. The barrier to entry for moving sensitive cargo has effectively been lowered, maybe even eliminated.
So if we step back, look at the bigger picture, this corridor isn't just improvised anymore. It's being locked in place by policy. That 20-year strategic deal, the free trade agreement coming online, this feels less like a temporary fix and more like a permanent feature.
And that structure isn't just air routes between Tehran and Caracas. It extends out onto the oceans globally. It connects them into this whole ecosystem of sanctions evasion, particularly this notorious shadow fleet of oil tankers. That's the context linking Russia, Iran, and Venezuela.
The shadow fleet. Tell us about the scale of that, because the numbers I've seen are just huge.
They are truly staggering. Maritime analysts, by late 2024, were estimating this shadow fleet at somewhere between 900 and 1,000 tankers.
900 to 1,000.
Yeah, which represents something like 17 to 19% of the entire global oil tanker capacity. Think about that. Almost a fifth of the world's tanker fleet operating in the shadows.
That's not some small-time smuggling ring. That's a parallel global shipping industry specifically designed to dodge sanctions and hide cargo origins.
Precisely. And it services Russia, Iran, and Venezuela, often interchangeably. These ships use complex, opaque ownership structures, flags of convenience from less regulated countries, the whole playbook. A tanker might haul Iranian crude one month, Venezuelan the next, maybe Russian fuel oil after that. Its core business is moving sanctioned commodities without scrutiny.
So connecting that back to the uranium question, what's the implication of this massive shared clandestine fleet?
The implication is profound. It means a sophisticated large-scale system already exists and is operating daily, specifically designed to move valuable sanctioned commodities oil, primarily completely off the books. So when you factor that in the long-term strategic pacts, the ready-to-go dual-use air logistics, and this shared maritime shadow fleet that excels at hiding cargo well, continuing to treat the potential movement of uranium as purely hypothetical starts to look, frankly, complacent. The means for the worst-case scenario are already operational.
Which brings us, I guess, to the bottom line. Our sources seem to point towards needing two distinct approaches here, something called analytic humility and operational clarity.
Exactly. Analytic humility is about being rigorous with the facts. State what we know, the geology in Venezuela, Iran's near-breakout nuclear stockpile, the fully built logistics network, and state what we don't know. There is no public, verifiable proof that Venezuelan uranium ore has actually been transferred to Iran. Acknowledge the gap.
Okay, so that's knowing the limits. What's operational clarity?
Operational clarity means you shift from treating this as just an intelligence puzzle, waiting for the smoking gun, to seeing it as an unacceptable proximity to a potential disaster. The policy focus then becomes less about finding proof of past transfers and more about drastically raising the cost and risk of using that existing infrastructure, the planes, the workshops, the ships, for any nuclear-related purpose in the future. Make it too difficult. Too dangerous for them to even consider, regardless of whether Iran has officially decided to build a weapon or not.
That's a sobering place to land. Because, as you said, the corridor is already real. It's welded into airframes, tanker hulls, radar masts, and mining pits. The infrastructure isn't hypothetical. It's built, paid for, operational right now for moving gold and drones. So the provocative thought for you to consider is, which political decision is actually easier for Tehran and Caracas to make down the line? Keep moving gold or switch to moving small amounts of high-value yellow cake using the same routes? What's the next signal you should be watching for in the new sanctions enforcement diplomatic moves? We'll leave you with that. Thanks for diving deep with us.